for its battle-tested weapons, weapons tested against Palestinians. Israel was also exporting advisors. It was exporting strategies. So, for example, the Guatemalan military turned to Israeli advisors in order to help devise their counterinsurgency strategy against their indigenous populations, which resulted in enormous numbers of deaths, including what has been called a genocide in the early 1980s. So, in some ways, Israel has long been a junior partner to the United States when it comes to military and foreign policy. Places and moments where the United States might not want to be involved very explicitly, Israel has stepped in to supply the weapons and the advisors and the technology and the strategies that the United States might not have wanted to do for themselves.
Viet Thanh Nguyen, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Pulitzer Prize-winning author, professor at the University of Southern California, his latest book, To Save and to Destroy, Writing as an Other. Also co-editor of the new book, The Cleaving, Vietnamese Writers in the Diaspora. We'll link to your op-ed in the Los Angeles Times today. Americans are still learning the wrong lessons from Vietnam. Viet Thanh Nguyen is on a national book tour. He'll be here in New York, in Brooklyn, Thursday night at the Center for Fiction, and at Rizzoli Bookstore in Manhattan on Friday. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Has job openings. Go to democracynow.org to learn more. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Mammoth Live, bringing X and Los Lobos, 99 years of rock and roll, to Portland's Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall on November 3rd. Tickets available Friday at 10 a.m. at portland5.com.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:02 a.m. Next up is PDX Progressive Talk Radio.
Next group is actually the very first group that I started singing with back in whenever it was, many years ago. Then they were young and I was middle-aged. At that time I thought, oh man, sing with these really young people, I'm gonna get this cool new audience of lots of young people. And one couple came back one night and they had come to see the Indigo Girls. That's who's coming out. And they said, came backstage and she said, we weren't going to stay and see you, but they suggested that we do, and it was good. Okay, Indigo Girls, Mary Chapin Carpenter. To fly,
love and I. Love is gentle and love is kind. The sweetest flower when first it's new.
Welcome to PDX Progressive Talk Radio, where progressive dialogue meets local action. Every fourth Wednesday of the month, join us for insights and solutions on critical issues impacting Oregon. Let's create change together. We are PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Hello, hello. It's so good to be here at KBOO in Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM. So before I get started too far, I have to make an announcement, and some of you may already know this. Now I lost my script. Yes, I use a script, at least for some of my show. And it is, so now... Last week, you had a show that was pre-recorded, and there was a reason for that. Our normal host, Moses Ross, was supposed to arrive to do the show last Wednesday, April 30th. Unfortunately, what ultimately ended up happening is he suffered a massive asthma attack, and my job has always been to stand in for Moses Ross when he could not be here because he's running for office or he has some other commitment. He was very involved in the DNC and for Oregon State and the Multnomah County Dams and his Multnomah Village Neighborhood Association. So he's very busy. So my job as co-host was to be the board op, be the camera person, be the co-host, stand in when Moses is gone. Well, Moses passed away on April 23rd in the morning while he was preparing to come here to KBOO to do the show because I couldn't get here. So he was going to do it solo. So for everybody who has posted on Facebook and online and offered up donations to the fundraiser for Emma and his memorial and stuff, thank you. And I'm taking over the show, obviously. I'm standing in for Moses because he can't be here. So, this is a call-in show, and I'm excited to talk to people. If you want to call in and share your thoughts, that's great. This morning, I want to kind of talk about an argument that's happening currently between DA Nathan Vasquez, believe is his name, and Jessica Vega Peterson. I am not, as you probably have seen me claim on all the socials. So for those of you who are just now getting to know the show, I've been, while Moses was concentrating on his political stuff and his running for office and everything, I've been on the other side on the social media because I'm a digital marketing person. I've been on the other side building out our social media channels. So we have a Facebook, an Instagram, a TikTok, Which is where I am usually, is either on Facebook or TikTok. And I figured out how to do live broadcasts on TikTok and Facebook at once. So that was pretty cool. So that's another thing I need to talk about. But I've been talking about this for the past few days, ever since it was announced, when Multnomah County Chair Vega Peterson unveiled her proposed budget for $4 billion for the next fiscal year. She's trying to help close a gap in the Portland City budget of what the article states is $15.5 million. So they're a wide range between what they need and what they have, right? And so what her budget suggests, and I don't like either of these two people, so I'm not necessarily taking sides, but in this instance, I agree with Vega Peterson. I do agree with the Multnomah County chair on this. Her plan increases funding for housing, shelters, rental assistance, and job programs, basically urgent support for our homeless crisis, but it also means cuts in other areas. So as a ramification of trying to build out our supports for housing, treatment, jobs, and stuff like this, for people who might not earn $100,000 a year, right? She has to take away what she believes she has to take away some money from the DA's office. And as far as I'm concerned, from the actions I've observed of the DA's office and of the Portland Police Bureau, those budgets are bloated anyway. So, and I know I'll probably get arguments about that, but we're obviously lacking in one area that really severely needs attention. And all of us have been screaming this at the top of our lungs for 30 years, that something needs to be done about housing, about the homelessness situation. What we're seeing today is 300 times worse than when I left here in 1994 and moved to Seattle. When I left in 94, people were screaming about jobs, affordable housing, and things like this. So how is it that has been festering over the past 30 years, but the budget for the DA's office continually increases? So this is the basis. I didn't just move here. I have a history. I moved to Oregon in fourth grade, and I've lived in Oregon five times over the years. So I have a history with the Portland area, and I've seen things. I used to hang out in Portland in high school, right, in downtown Portland, and in Clackamas and places like that. So I have a history here. I've seen what happened back then, and I see it today. And there's at least a 300% increase in the issues from back then. So these issues need to be taken care of. And Vasquez is now saying that the budget cut to his office is 5%, and that's too much because he's concerned about the retail theft task force that he believes he has put together that's supposed to solve all of our problems. He's not focused on people getting killed, gun violence, gangs, rapes, murders. He's concerned with his budget for retail theft, right? And he says that it's going to be a 5% decrease in his budget. She says 2%, that's semantics. 5 and 2, yeah, that's kind of a lot. And he's probably closer to the truth. But my point here is, if you, and it's not just my opinion, data backs this up. If you take money and solve the issues that permeate retail theft, all of a sudden the need for that task force diminishes completely. And my thought is Vasquez knows that, and he doesn't want to lose that funding because he wants his pockets filled in that department, right? He wants that flush cash. because and to think, I don't think he's dumb by any stretch. He's come this far. He's, you know, he's an intelligent person, I gather. But and not being dumb, common sense would state, if you help people get housing that they need desperately, and your neighbors will attest to the homeless people in their front yards and on their streets, if you take care of that housing problem and you take care of, because a lot of these people, and me having been homeless in Portland a couple of times, you don't start out as a drug addict. You run into one or two or three bad things that happen to you and you end up homeless. And that's where the downhill spiral begins. At least for a majority of the people I knew when I was homeless and myself. So you take care of those housing issues. You take care of the drug issues that have permeated from the lack of housing and lack of jobs. I mean, somebody should not have to work three jobs and still not be able to afford to pay rent. Right? That's ridiculous. And now, today, we have full families on living on the streets. There are something like 3,000 homeless students in the Portland public school system, right? And you have kids sitting in Starbucks parking lot because that's the only place they can gain access to Wi-Fi after the libraries are closed. I mean, I don't understand what the point he's missing here. If you take care of the housing, the jobs, and the treatment, and just plain infrastructure for a livable Portland, then you have the talk button. Okay, Santiago's on the line. Hi, Santiago. I can't hear him.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Hi, I can hear you now. Hi, Santiago.
Okay.
How are you today?
Hello. I'm doing all right. It's a beautiful day out. I'm sorry to hear about Moses. That's awful. I'm really sorry. I know.
Thanks.
I mean, I don't know how close, you know, it was to you, but I'm sorry for your loss regardless.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the one thing about is that, you know, morality is relative. Right, because at the end of the day, morality is all about whatever the shared goal or vision is of a particular set of people. And when, and you know, in a neoliberal state, which is what America is fundamentally right now, the state is weaponized to prevent market dynamics. To prevent the fallout from market dynamics, market shifts. So when you talk about how, you know, doing structural changes like you're talking about would actually fix, you know, the very minimal retail theft that we're actually seeing, because, you know, these guys don't want to talk about the fact that like bosses outright take wages from people, the wage theft that comes from the companies themselves.
Definitely.
But I digress.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what the fixing those things, it just for them, it costs, it's too much money. They're, at the end of the day, they're looking at the bottom line for the people who are people who are funding them.
Hear me out here for a second, because research shows that investing in housing, addiction recovery, and mental health services reduces the need for reactive crime fighting in the first place. People who are stable and housed and supported don't turn to survival tactics as they do get stealing a $3,000 purse to sell on Etsy or wherever they're selling. Posh now or something? They don't return to survival tactics and get caught up in the system, because that's another issue. Once these people get caught up in the system, it's actually more expensive to put somebody in incarceration and maintain their health, their food, their housing, than it is to help somebody be a self-sufficient contributor to the society.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. But what I'm saying is that that is not the ethos of a corporate-owned state. Their goal is to make as much money as possible wherever possible. We know that prison has like a 70% recidivism rate because of the fact that, you know, that prisons are essentially slave labor.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of companies, I know Whole Foods for sure uses prison labor for a lot of their organic
food. Do they?
Yeah, that's sad. And so the prison recidivism rate would it actually helps corporations, just in the same way that Democrats will never, ever, ever create a solid response to immigration for the same reason, because they understand that the people who fund them want to make as much money as possible while paying out as little as possible.
I'm gonna push back a little bit on that, because the Democrats and Republicans actually did come up with a plan during the last quarter of the Biden administration, actually the last half of last year, and Trump told the Republicans not to pass it because he wanted to use it for leverage in doing exactly what you're talking about. So they did have a plan to address the issues around our current immigration mess, and Trump told them not to pass it.
Well, so that would be fine if that was the only time this has happened, but you know, my people have been deported from this country for over 100 years for every reason under every administration.
Yep.
So it's more about a tactical response than it is about actually caring about the people.
Understood.
Because America has never cared about Mexicans, hardly ever. And the ones that they do recognize are the ones that made such a big stink that you couldn't ignore them.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is that, you know, if it means that they have to pay for coyotes to go across the border to pick up people and bring them here, they'll do that in order to underpay, in order to prevent having to pay American citizens a fair wage to be able to alleviate the problems we're talking about.
I don't have any substantiated proof of that, so that's not something that we can really talk about.
Well, Tyson Chicken did it. You can look it up. Tyson Chicken went and... But what I'm saying is that... That they could fix these issues overnight if they wanted to, but the fact of the matter is that they moved... They've purposely immiserated... And, like I said, bipartisanly have immiserated the American people because it's better for business.
Right.
I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm saying that the people who have money don't share that same ethos that we have.
I don't even think it's ethos. I think it's missing the point that it's more expensive to incarcerate somebody and feed and clothe them and maintain their health than it is to help people, a collective population, become self-sufficient citizens, earning an income and living their lives. Isn't that what these people are asking for in the first place? I mean, the voters in Portland, do they wish to continue walking past these tents and being accosted by ill individuals who just have simply not received the help that they need? Or do they want to actually do something, invest in Portland, invest in our infrastructure, invest in our communities for the greater outcome? I'm sorry, but his argument about the task force for retail theft falls flat. It's disingenuous. And I want to call him and ask him to come talk to me.
They found out that the retailers were lying about retail theft.
Well, I believe in a lot of cases with the broken windows and stuff, that's probably not completely true. That's probably a mixture of both.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that I'll have to find a study for you, but they did find out that a lot of the retailers who had set up in areas where it didn't really work out were blaming retail theft for low sales. And you know? And I mean, and they're, you know, it's about scapegoating. You know, it was profitable even before the civil rights era to bring black and brown folks into the unions, because it would have bolstered union membership. It would have created more power. But the thing is that, you know, we had people who depended on the free or extremely low wage labor of black and brown folks. And so it was more advantageous for them, for seeking profits, to be able to turn white working class against black and brown folks. What I'm saying, I'm not saying
exactly
that you're
right.
Wrong. I'm saying that their business model doesn't include, that the ruling class's business model doesn't include improving people's lives. And we have to stop expecting that stats and statistics are just showing them stats and statistics are going to fix the problem, because they fundamentally do not care about what working class people in Portland need.
Right, or homeless, basically, which is why in this
homeless
case, I make a stand and back Jessica Vega Peterson's proposal. Right? I think it's the right way to go. I think it's the right thing to do. I do have a couple other things I want to talk about, Santiago, and it looks like I have another call. So I want to bid you thank you, and I hope you have a great sunny day. No name. Hello, caller. I've had to work that phone system before. Hang tight. We'll get you. I want to thank Santiago for calling. He makes some very valid points. Another thing I wanted to talk about today while we work out the phone gremlin thing. Are we on?
Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
It's good to talk with you.
It's a really painful pleasure to talk to you this morning because of the news that you hit us with early on.
Yes.
I am deeply and profoundly sorry.
Thank you.
Because Moses represented something that is very important in our community.
Many things.
I asked your board op to for permission to come aboard and try to turn this ship around a little bit and getting back to the subject of shelter.
Yes.
Housing. Home. I have been blessed for a number of years to be able to abide in subsidized housing.
Wow.
And the waiting list for that is now years out.
Yep.
But it's important to note, for me to note, that any number of persons who then are rented to or are offered the opportunity to fit in to a subsidized apartment, any number of them continue in their addictive ways. And it's kind of frustrating to see that having been given the opportunity to be sheltered safely and your stuff. Remember George Carlin? He said, we have a place just for our stuff. And that's kind of what it is.
Well, that's why I want to lean into the treatment and the jobs programs. Those
right
are very, very seriously needed fundamentals in our Portland collective community.
You are absolutely right on to point that out, because the persons who are given these opportunities, who continue in their illness, are making a mockery of the system and put everyone else at some risk. When a subsidized renter, for instance, has an apartment, a private home, a place for their stuff, and they usher in drug dealers, drug
right
users,
yep,
and the like, it really spoils so much of it for those of us who live and wish to live in peace.
So what
I'm not saying
What would you suggest as a monitoring or solution to that issue? Because you're right, well, there is a portion of the population who does get the help that others need, and they are themselves disingenuous about their level of want or desire to be self-sufficient.
Correct. And I don't know the answer at all. I do know that that it's very frustrating, and that more people need shelter.
Well,
and
yeah.
I don't know that Mayor Wilson's notions, which he promised quite vociferously from the get-go of his campaign, and apparently, which were the tipping point that elected him to the office of mayor, which is a weak mayor system now that we've changed things. I don't know that his plans can come to fruition, but building structures is not enough.
Moses had a little bit of an issue with the collective shelters. So like, you know, 50, right. 60 people per floor in a shelter.
And
I agree.
Right.
But they're the shelters that offer the most success in their existence are the ones that give the residents or the people,
privacy,
the patients,
and
dignity and
privacy
and help.
Yeah. And there is little hope if we don't use the multi-pronged approach.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say nothing more because it breaks my heart, and I sit here in still in shock at the death of Moses, and I'm going to let you go, and somebody is going to offer some real solutions, not just a complaint about the problem.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Well, I do have an idea, and I do appreciate your call. Thank you so much. We will desperately miss Moses, and I've got to change the intro. But it's thank you so much for your kind words and your thoughtful commentary. I wanted to. Years ago, I live in rural Clackamas County, and there was an opportunity at one time for me to speak about ideas that I had for a certain building in our community. I wanted it to be, because we had a small, relatively compared to Portland, we had a small homeless community. And I wanted to take this building and retrofit it for incoming, intake, and then identify issues, so mental health issues, treatment, any of the underlining issues that people would have that are barriers to being self-sufficient, even if it's, severe mental health, then you get in partnership with the county and you find resources to help those people because they may not make the next level. The next level was going to be learning how to use the computer, learning how to build a resume, learning basic life skills. So the process would be intake, determination, and then from there your org chart would show, okay, if this person meets all of the components to the next level, fine. If not, they go here. So they meet all the components to the next level. The next level is life skills. So how do you pay your bills? How do you buy your food? How do you, live a sober, a sober, happy life and be a functioning unit in the community? And then the next thing is, as part of this life skills curriculum, would be touching on looking for jobs, looking at your skill set. And okay, did you have an education? Did you have post-college? What kind of education did you have? What kind of skills do you currently have? And what kind of skills do you want to grow? And then from there, you go into learning how to develop those skills. So that's a partnership with the local community college, potentially, or a private institution that's willing to be a nonprofit that can help with this section, and then you teach them how to actually interview, apply for a job, and everything like this. I had an entire whole ecosystem, and they sold the building to the police department. So now they're building a great big police department for this little town of like 10,000 people. So yeah, tragic, broke my heart. But I didn't have the money, right? I would not have had the money, but I could have built out a proposal to gain funding. And I wasn't allowed that option either. However, in Oregon City, there is, in Clackamas County, there is the Clackamas County Homeless Solutions Coalition. This group has been around for, I want to say 10 years, if not a little more, maybe closer to 15. They are actually building a facility in Oregon City that is going to do some of these things in collaboration with local partnerships in that area. And I'm super excited. Waiting. The building has, I think they have started construction on the building, and they're working with My Father's Heart and some of the other local partners in Oregon City. And I will be keeping you up on that, because that program that the coalition is building is the closest to one, the one I had in my head that I wanted to see come to fruition. So I'm excited about that. If you have not heard earlier this week, was it yesterday or Monday? I think it was Monday. The Lyft and Uber, the Drivers Union of Oregon, went to Salem and stood up for Lyft drivers' rights, so workers' rights. So as a Lyft driver, they tell you you've made so much per this ride based on $30 an hour or $28 an hour, when that's actually not so. As a Lyft driver, if you have driven somebody 15 minutes, you might have made $10-ish, maybe, depending on the subscription that the Lyft rider has, the time of day, what level of Lyft driver you are, which is based on the vehicle that you could afford to operate, which is absurd. They say that you receive 75% of your rider's fee after the fees that you pay. As a Lyft driver, we must not only have a Lyft endorsement on our insurance that we pay extra for, but we have to pay Lyft for their insurance as well. For while the rider's in the car, we have to pay to use the Lyft system, the app, and then there's a litany of other fees. So their big thing is you get paid 75% of what the client, the rider, has been charged after fees, which usually is only about 30%. The driver's union estimates about 40-45%. I say it's 30 because I've done, well, it's for between 30-40%. You can just do the calculations in your head. And so Sunday, was it Sunday, I think? Sunday, I did a live with them on Facebook and TikTok, and the group is growing. And this is something really good to see, because organizations like Lyft and Uber prey on people who aren't, you know, who don't make 100 grand a year or even 30 grand a year. If you want to drive, now I have actually done this. I have driven 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, and was able to bring home the calculation was $1,000 a week. But if you take out gas, and you don't necessarily have to have food, but you do have to pay taxes. If you take out gas and tax money, you're looking at $750 a week, and that's 12 hours a day, 5 days a week. And that is hard. It really, because it just, driving is taxing, and it takes everything out of you. So my thought was, well, I'll work on my other projects on the weekends. I'll go ahead and drive all week and work on my other projects on the weekends. No, you drive all week and you sleep Saturday, right? So that's how that happens. This is a talk show. If you want to call in, you can talk about Moses. You can talk about this thing with the DA. Now, I was going over some objections people might have to what I was saying about the issue with fixing the root causes that permeate this retail theft or any kind of theft. I mean, you have people who have issues and will go out and kill people, will go out and shoot people. This poor 13-year-old child that died due to a stray gun bullet, that was ridiculous. And I hope they find, I don't know if they have, but I hope they find the person that shot that gun. People like this, they are the ones that need our attention, not, you know, and yes, retail theft, he is valid. That is an issue. But come on, we have greater fish to fry. And if we focus on the infrastructure and making things better in Portland for the citizens of Portland, then again, the need for a task force for retail theft becomes a disingenuous statement. It becomes just, so anyway, people, one of the objections is people don't feel safe. We need to crack down on theft and we, not law enforcement. So if anybody who has lived here for a certain amount of time understands, Portland Police Bureau has a history of excessive force. So I understand we need law enforcement, but we also, if we take care of the root causes, then the need for law enforcement at that level diminishes. And I'm being told by Ty. Ty is our board op. And I'm so happy that he is here, because otherwise I'd be having to do this and answer the phones and take care of all of everything. And so, Ty, thank you. I appreciate you. And he said, I have a phone call. Do we have a name? I'm sorry? Tangent? Hi, Tangent.
Hey, how are you? And peace to you and to your process.
Thank you. I need to change headsets. Hold on a second.
Okay.
This might be better. Ooh, that's loud.
Fine.
Hold on. Okay.
Okay, so yay. I'm going to go in reverse order because I don't want to forget that. And the last thing you were talking about was working for Lyft. And
yeah.
And my God, I had no idea they had like so many. But look at all the, any hierarchical thing, they want to, like, and critics do this too. I mean, every kind of form of structure of power, they want to break everything up into a whole bunch of pieces. You
yep.
see what I'm saying? Can't be simply you have a car and you're driving. What, you get paid more if you have an Escalade?
Yes, or that's exactly right.
Or is that, okay, mm-hmm. so, okay.
And the
that's
year
one.
Matters.
The other thing that you were not considering was the wear and tear on your
yep.
vehicle.
Yep. They don't help with that
and
at
that's
all.
That's a lot. And when I was paying taxes, this is like 10 years ago, I had a business. I think it was like the government allows you 45 cents or so per mile. And I think it's probably it's certainly
it's
more than that.
It's 61 cents now.
Okay. So there you go. That's a lot of miles you were driving that week.
Yep.
And that's another 100 or, you know, I'm just saying there.
Your oil changes go from maybe one every 6 months to every 6 weeks. And they're $100 a pop.
So, okay, so about your earlier things, you're talking about having this great idea. Well, anyway, here we go. There's something called cause and effect.
Yep.
But what these politicians want to do is substitute those two things, and they go, we have a homeless problem, we have to attack it, you know. But they don't go, we could prevent it. But what you're talking about being efficient and such, yes, there are solutions, but the thing is they're not spending their money. They're spending our money.
Right.
And they're getting, they've got some friends that are in this business. And you get it? There's a lot
right.
of, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. But anyway, we just are out here saying that we demand that people be treated with dignity. And I've also been on the street, and it wasn't like for lack of, I mean, well, basically I could attribute it to the economic crash of 08, but,
right.
but it was just family strife that
mm-hmm.
came out of that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my whatever. I don't want to get into it too deeply, but I just feel it on both ends. And so I'm always going to have a heart for people like that. It's, and I still give people, you know. I mean, it's not for me to judge. I've done this even in New York City back in like the 80s. I came from a somewhat wealthy place, Reston, Virginia. You know, it was like a new community, tra-la, but I won't get into all that. The thing was that I'd never seen a homeless person, okay? And I moved to New York, and there they were. And so I'm like, how do I know? And I decided I would have this magic pocket. And so whatever change, even loose dollars, you know. No, I think I just made it loose change. That's what it was. It could be $2. It could be 50 cents. But anyway, that's what I just did. And I figured, you know, the universe would know.
Right.
It was a random thing, you see. I don't know if we want to get into... I guess the only thing I would say about Trump... First of all, here, that's been 30 days, a month of nothing... All this tariff hoopla was nothing. Now he's not going to do it. But he made people made house payments off writing articles about this and on the news. That's all they've been talking about. And then it completely goes backwards. Who says he was ever going to do it in the first place? It's like this boy that cries wolf, man, but he's getting away with it.
The result is we will have nothing. I saw an article brief this morning that said the economy of the United States shrank by 3%. There are reports coming out from every outlet except the mainstream, and that's something else I'm going to be addressing on the next show. We have one more show in a week next Wednesday, and then we'll go every other week. But ships with the containers on them are like two-thirds full, and a lot of those containers have almost, you know, they're like half full from the stories that I don't know verbatim. I have to do more research, but those are what I've been seeing. And that's another difference between Moses and I. Moses was so dedicated to his local political activities that he focused on that, and he was a political strategist, and he had clients all over the country. So he focused his energies on the local political communities and his clients, where I am all over the internet. I'm on social, I'm on the news, I'm on Substack, I follow independent creators and stuff like this. So I'm seeing different things. And the people that Aaron Parnas, Brian Tyler Cohen, Luke Beasley,
David Pakman,
all these other things. No, they're, but this is where we're getting our information, because the mainstream media is not talking about it. Right? They aren't saying that the containers are coming in half full. They aren't saying that we need to stock up today, because starting in May, the shelves are going to be more empty than they were during COVID.
That's what it was. Yes, that was just remembering seeing empty shelves at Rite Aid or something, and
yes,
or half empty shelves. Then they started putting up boxes going, more inventory coming soon. And I've been in retail. I'm like, that's like a big no-no. You do not want empty shelf space in a store of any kind.
Right.
It shows you want abundance. You know, you want to show. So
people need to start bracing. If you can, and one creator this morning was showing the top shelf of a store. She does the shopping for people thing, Instacart. And she was showing the top of a shelf that was completely empty, that was usually the overstock. And she's like, people need to get out and start stocking up. And I commented, people can't even afford groceries. How are they supposed to start stocking up? Right? We are in for, May is going to be an interesting month, and we all need to collectively come out of our homes and get involved in our communities. We need to start sharing resources. We need to start sharing information about how to grow your own food, about how to do all of these different things. We're going to have to be self-sustainable, or our current homeless population will grow exponentially over the next few months. Because
Let's
people just
the world want like homegrown tomatoes. I'll just leave it on that. Brevity.
Yeah.
Thank you, Doug.
Tangent, thank you.
We'll be.
Elaine? We have a caller. Hi, Lane.
Hi. I'm calling just to kind of talk about your first subject, you know, the retail theft and all that.
Yeah, please.
So I moved here about 10 years ago. I was a drug addict back home. I came here, moved into a sober living house after going through like a 30-day treatment program.
Good.
In California. And I immediately relapsed and was kicked out. And so I had nowhere to live all of a sudden. You know, I didn't have any family or friends here. And so I ended up on the streets. I didn't want to call my parents and tell them I relapsed because they just put me through that program. So I just didn't call them. And I ended up on the streets. And I eventually became, you know, a retail thief. That's like how I got by.
Thank you for calling. Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah, So I, you know, I was out there for about 3 years, and I was shoplifting every day. Basically, that's what I learned to do. So I ended up going to jail a lot. And I feel like today, you know, I got out of it in 2019.
Congratulations.
I was in jail for like the 14th time or something, and I was finally offered a program called Drug Court in
mm-hmm.
Clackamas County.
Mm-hmm.
And that eventually led to a program called CSAP, which is Clackamas Substance Abuse Program.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that kind of a program is really going to be what the solution is to the whole problem. It's such a small, right now it's like, it's, I don't think the funding is there. It's pretty small. They can only help, I think, 30 people at a time. But that program, it's weird because it kind of measures both worlds. You know, there's like the treatment side, but then there's also the DA side, like the judicial side. Because in order to get into that program, you have to be in jail.
Right.
Basically facing prison. But I think that, you know, a huge issue that people on the streets have, which I experienced myself, was I didn't want to go to treatment. And I didn't want help when I was out there. And that's a big thing. We can have as many treatment centers as we can here, but if no one wants to go.
But there's only, as I understand, and I, you know, having been on the streets myself, and understanding the studies behind this, there's only about 3% of the people currently living on the streets that don't want help.
Well, I guess
if you offer a person housing, they will take it.
Housing, yes, I agree with that. But something that I've seen since getting clean and getting back into society, like I've managed a treatment center, a small treatment center in
yep.
Southeast Portland. I worked at a couple homeless shelters. Actually, was the program manager of the Menlo Park Safe Rest Village in Southeast.
Right.
For a while. So like I've worked with a lot of people, and housing definitely that's a huge thing. But what I've seen is people. They get into housing, they get this funding, you know, they get put into an apartment for up to 2 years paid.
Right.
But then they end up, you know, bringing all their friends over because they never really got any help
right.
to begin with, like
right.
their substance problems. So they're yep. bringing all these people into their new apartment, and then they end up getting evicted.
Yep.
And they're back in the shelter again. And so I think there needs to be like a transition, which is why I think that the funding really needs to go towards these programs for people that are in jail. These people that have already proven to be retail thieves, you know, the program only helps people that are in for nonviolent crimes, which is mainly, you know, retail theft and stuff like that.
So funding in those situations comes from taxpayer dollars. And I do appreciate the fact that congratulations that you have been clean for what, five years now?
2017. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so almost 10 years. Good for you.
Yeah, I got into the program.
Job.
I got into the program in 2017. It took me 2 years to complete it. That's the thing also, that those kind of programs, there is no end date. They right. let you go when they feel like you're ready.
And right.
So
those programs are fabulous. The ones I want to create are before you go to jail. I want to create the ones that bring people in, and I've known enough addicts that while you're in the throes of addiction, no, you don't want treatment. You don't think anything's wrong. You think that you're living just the fine life and everything, right? But at some point, it hits you. When you're not in survival mode anymore, it will hit you that, wow, there are other things in the universe that I could be doing.
I could see that, yeah. That just wasn't my experience. I never had that opportunity.
Right. You never had that opportunity.
Yeah, you know, I had to go to jail a few times to
yeah.
to be able to see that. But I think, you know, I mean, even if funding goes to both programs, you know, I think that, you know, because when I went to jail, I still didn't feel like I was a bad person. You know, I was doing these things, stealing from stores. I didn't feel like I was bad. And when I found out I was facing prison, I was baffled. Like, you know, I thought that prison was for bad people. And like, I couldn't believe that was something that I was going
to
be facing.
No, you were surviving. You were surviving. Exactly. You were a good person trying to survive and probably helping your friends.
Yeah, and there's, right? You know, there's so many people out there that are in the same situation and, you know, in and out of jail. And I think it'd be great to offer help to people that haven't been to jail. And I think that I could see having that realization while you're getting the help that there are better things in life.
Well, that I have a question for you. I have a real quick, sure. I don't mean to cut you off, but I am running out of time, and I have a question for you. Think sure. about when you because you made a realization that you were missing out on other things in life. What was your surroundings? What was the situation when you decided that was a reality?
It was when I basically realized that I have a lot of people that care about me, my community, and I didn't find that until I was in treatment.
Where were you exactly? Where were you physically? Did you have a roof? Did you have stability? Did you have some sense of safety?
I was in treatment. Yeah,
exactly. And that's my point. Instead of throwing people in jail for something that's, yes, it's an issue, but it's not a make or break type of situation that can be fixed if investments are made in housing, security and safety, housing, education and treatment, which ultimately ends up making people feel secure, that goes away. At least a large portion of it goes away. You don't need millions of dollars for a task force to address something that is not.
I'm not arguing with you on that. I completely agree with you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm not saying that people that we need a task force or anything. I disagree with that whole thing. I was just calling to say, you know, I feel like that for at least some people like me, like I needed a place where I wasn't really allowed to leave. I mean, the doors were unlocked. I could have left if I wanted to, but what kept me in treatment in at least those first initial months was the fact that if I left, I would be, you know, I would have a warrant and they would find me. And so I it took a few months for me to finally realize, you know, and build these relationships with people that are in the same boat as me. And now, like, you know, I have family in Oregon. That's everyone that I was in there with, you know, and it's and most of us are doing really well.
And you're a guiding light for many of them, aren't you?
I'm sorry, what?
You're a guiding light for many of them.
Yeah, I try to be. And, you know, that's what I try to bring into my work. I just got hired at another treatment center. I'm going to be starting soon. So it's, you know, it's great when you get clean and realize, you know, all the good things in life that you just didn't have for so long. It's also really sad that you were missed out for so long. But I completely agree that funding needs to go towards that and not the DA. I don't think people should be thrown in jail. I hate the fact that I was thrown in jail so many times. Now I have this lengthy criminal record that I didn't need to have.
Right.
So.
Well, and then the argument is, oh, personal responsibility. Dude, you know, people, their husbands die, their wives die, they lose an income, then they lose their house, they live in their car, and now they're losing their car because they probably couldn't make the payments anymore, or if it is paid off, it breaks down, and so now they can't do anything because it costs money to get it fixed. Things happen. Personal accountability goes only so far. And I want to tell you, Lane, congratulations. Good job. Only now you have barriers to employment. But luckily, you're in a situation where people will employ you to help others who used to be where you were.
Yeah, I mean, I should say for anyone out there who has a record or, you know, anything like that, like the recovery field is really like a great place to work because your experience, you know, committing crimes and everything out there, that actually kind of helps you in this field, knowing what people are going through and everything.
Knowing how people think.
Yeah, and, you know, we love people apply that have lived experiences like that.
I noticed that on a lot of... also, I want to advocate for Join PDX. Join PDX is an organization that helps house homeless people and helps them learn how to get jobs and learns how... learn how to do your resume, and they help with a lot of homeless people in the area. PSR, we need to keep up with PSR, please. There's some people out there trying to diminish the success that is PSR. And Lane, I want to thank you for your vulnerability and your ability to come on here and talk with us.
Sure, thank you. Have a good day.
You too, sir. We're getting close to closing time. Mark? Okay, this is going to be it. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for your valuable program. I'm very sad about Moses.
Thanks.
220 lawsuits in 100 days. So
yeah.
Maybe the American empire is over. Maybe it should be called Pinocchio's dream.
Maybe.
And countries are happy to be independent of the United States.
Yeah, they're making their own plans. The dollar is decreasing in value for sure.
And the Seattle port was a ghost town. They only expect one Chinese ship in the month of May.
Yep.
And that will be it. That will be it. So we've done it ourselves.
Yep.
You know, and I was going to talk about the Vienna plan, where the state buys property to prevent speculation, and the rents are lower than in Munich. That's a great example for us. And the old downtown post office could be a village of SROs.
Yep.
And also afford transitional houses.
Mark, thank you. Ty is telling me it's time to go. Thank you, Ty, for everything. Thank you, Mark, for calling. Thank you to all the callers, and I'm going to see you next week at 8 a.m. Enjoy your day. I think it's closing.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland por el
90.7
FM y transmitiendo en línea a través de KBOO.
I'm all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole.